Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thursday, August 11, 2011. Welcome, everyone. This is the Savage Nation. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage tonight. We're at 1-800-449-8255. Want to just thank Dr. Savage for lending me his microphone today. We're going to be talking about a whole lot of things. You've seen, I think, by now, the big scene in Ames, Iowa. Mitt Romney got heckled by a really prepared, very well-planted, probably rehearsed, liberal heckler. This is the beginning of the campaign against the candidates. We're also going to be talking about, well, there's a little bit of seal porn being developed by the White House. And we're going to be talking about the super committee. Now that it's fully formed and all 12 members are picked, what the heck are they going to be doing? And the big debate tonight. There's going to be a bunch of questions we're going to be talking about. Questions you probably won't hear tonight, but you should be hearing from the reporters asking all eight of the Republican wannabes present. We're going to be talking, too, about some of the people who aren't on the stage. Rick Perry, governor of Texas, is making some informal announcements about his formal announcement. Apparently, the good governor is going to jump into the race right after the Iowa straw poll on Saturday. All right, let's get right to today's news. We're going to be talking about this a whole lot, ladies and gentlemen, for one simple reason. This is the predicate. This is the rehearsal. This is the first revelation of what we're going to be seeing all through the 2012 campaign. We saw today Mitt Romney in Ames, Iowa, trying to make a speech. He was simply trying to talk about his major economic points. And, you know, whatever you think of Governor Romney, he handled this relatively well. Listen to this heckler. Guys, cut 16, please.
We're not going to do that. And so I'm glad you're on Social Security. Hold on just a moment. Hold on just a moment. Hold on just a moment. You know what? I get a chance. I can let you speak in a moment.
You came here to listen to the people.
No, 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 no. I came here to speak, and you'll get to ask a question. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. I'll let you speak. Hold on a second. Let me speak. Hold on a second.
Social Security for the future. Security. We're also on Medicare.
Good.
It's a tremendous program. What are you going to do to strengthen Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid without cutting benefits?
All right, now think about what this guy was doing. And again, Romney handled it pretty well. He raised some good points in rebuttal. But what no one else on talk radio is analyzing right now, what is this guy's motivation? Not Romney, this demonstrator. Remember last year and the year before, you know, when we went through all of the town halls and all of the things we saw with the purple-shirted thugs from SEIU. We saw people who were probably paid, very well organized, bust to different town halls, people literally manhandling and in some cases beating the town hall attendees. This is the tip of the iceberg. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who this character was that was heckling Romney, but what we're seeing now is just act one. What we're going to see all through this campaign, and it's going to be at the straw polls, it's going to be in the primary elections, it's going to be wherever conservatives gather to hear one of the candidates speak. What we're going to see are people like this liberal who heckled Romney. You have to understand, the liberals do not believe in free speech. That's point number one. But point number two, there's an awful lot of people out there. There's unions like SEIU. There's people like George Soros. There's a lot of people out there who are going to pay for these people to go and heckle Republican candidates. They are going to organize them. They're going to provide them scripts. They're going to provide them with rehearsals. And you're going to see this thing was pretty crude today. This was not something that I would say is you know, the first string of the hecklers we're going to see. You know, you remember all the nonsense that went on whenever Don Rumsfeld or Condi Rice went to testify in front of Congress and you saw the code pinkos out there trying to throw fake blood on Condi Rice. These people are going to be much, much worse. They've learned. They learn a lot. They study what goes on in the political process. They study what goes on in the minds of the campaigns of our candidates. And what they're going to be doing from now on, all through this campaign, it's not even going to stop, ladies and gentlemen. When you have the nominating conventions, you're going to see this all the way through to November of 2012. These people are going to be out there very well rehearsed, very well scripted, and very, very well prepared. The candidates are not going to be able to get in any decent speeches without having some of this go on. There's going to be things. I mean, you remember, all of this is going on right now. All of these things that are going on, like, what was it, last year when Debbie Wasserman Schultz was having a demonstration outside Congressman Alan West's campaign headquarters when she was accusing him of all sorts of things. They weren't true, but it wasn't really necessary. The liberals don't care about the truth. What they care about is scoring media points. Now, this guy who got a hold of Romney today and managed to take over that speech of his for only a minute or two, granted, but think about what happened. Romney's speech was disrupted. He made some good points later, but he did not get to make the speech he wanted to make. He did not get to go into the people who wanted to talk to him at that point. All he saw was the people who were heckling him. All right, let's go right to the phones. Let's go to, how about Norman in Sacramento? This is the Savage Nation. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say that the one thing I overheard in the conversation was that the man, the heckler, yelled to Romney that, look, you've come here to listen to the people. And I think a lot of our public servants forget that. They believe that they go there to speak down to the people and that the people just listen to them and go to the voting booth and do what they want. But the people, his question was, when you rewrite Medicare and Social Security, what's it going to do to strengthen the people? Okay.
Well, Norman, you know, that the point you make is not a bad one, okay? But the real issue here is you can ask that question in a calm and decisive and intelligent tone like you just did. But what this guy was doing, he was not trying to ask a question, Norman. What he was trying to do is disrupt Romney's speech, which he succeeded in doing. He was trying to drown out Romney's answer, which he succeeded in doing for a while. And that's where I distinguish between, you know, reasonable people such as you. You know, we may disagree, we may not disagree, but, you know, the two of us are not going to sit here and scream at each other. Don't you agree? I mean, this to me is a fundamental difference. This is the difference between free speech and heckling and screaming and shouting and repression. What do you think?
Well, I think the man was trying to get his point across, and Romney wouldn't even take the question. He said, no, don't be, you know, they're trying to shut him up. And if Romney had said, hey, look, okay, what is your question? Then the whole thing would have been handled right then and there. But they resisted each other, and of course that doesn't
work. Well, yeah, the problem is, you know, when you're giving a speech, you save the question and answer period for the end, and this guy interrupted in the middle, Norman. That's the problem we've got. These people, if you want to make some sort of a speech, you should be allowed to continue, and, you know, you get on the platform, you give your speech, and that's it. And then you maybe take questions if you want to. But hecklers like this guy, they're not interested in a reasoned debate. They're not interested in hearing what Romney said. They wanted to interfere. They wanted to disrupt. And this guy did for a while. Again, Romney handled it pretty well. I guess you and I are just going to have to disagree on this. All right. Thank you very much for the call. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Okay. Jerome from Salt Lake City. Hey, thanks for calling in.
You bet. I've seen this play before. My parents saw it in the 1920s with the black shirts in Italy, in the 1920s and 30s with the brown shirts in Germany. I saw it myself with the demonstrators in the 60s mostly, and oozing into the 70s. And oh, by the way, our administration is a direct descendant of those. So let's say that he had said, as the previous caller said, let the guy express his question. Well, he would have been asking that so-called question for the next 15 minutes because the objective is not to let the candidate speak.
Well, you're exactly right, Jerome, and that's the point. Now, I'm not ready to call these guys fascists, although some of their tendencies certainly appear to have the basic fascist motives operandi. And I'm not going to accuse these guys of being Nazis because I don't think anyone should be accused of that without having demonstrated some really murderous conduct. But the basic point here is these guys are disruptive. They want to disrupt the speeches. They want to make sure that the candidates can't speak. And this is going to be going on again and again and again. Hey, Jerome, very nice call. Thank you very much for it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jed Babin, columnist for Real Clear Politics and the American Spectator. This is the Savage Nation. We're going to take a break and come right back to your calls. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. All right, let's get back to the calls. We're talking about the fact that Mitt Romney's speech was disrupted today as a prelude, as a rehearsal, as a backup plan for some of the things we're going to be seeing all through this campaign. We're going to be seeing organized heckling and disruption of the candidates, all on the Republican side, and you're not going to see this behavior by conservatives. This is what we're going to get from the likes of SEIU and George Soros and more. All right, let's go right back to your calls. How about let's go to John in my hometown. John in New York City on WOR 710. This is the Savage Nation. Welcome aboard.
Good to be here. I have to say I'm a Republican, but I think Ron and this one lost it, and I'll explain you why. I feel like that the person that was screaming, you know, maybe he was a nutcase. Maybe he had a valid point to scream. But the bottom line, the way Ron handled him, they just wanted to shut him up, which shows you that Ron is a CEO. It's not a president of a country. He knows how to run a big business, and the moment you don't agree with the CEO, he just wants to shut you down, and that's what he wanted to do there. And he's vicious, and he lost that battle, and he needs to be more caring and understanding, even if the person is a little crazy. And there's plenty of them on our side as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's plenty of crazy people in all parts of politics, John, but I really disagree with you. Look, I've given a lot of speeches in my time in front of some pretty big audiences, and when you have someone like that who is preventing you from giving your speech, you don't have to be civil to them after a point. What you do, and I do, I've done it many times, you say, sir, you've made your point, please sit down, I'll get back to you in the questions period. What Romney did was certainly not vicious, John. He was very calm. He was smiling through most of it, and he made some very good points. What this guy wanted to do was disrupt the speech. He didn't want to ask a question. He was making his own demonstration to interrupt and disrupt what Romney was doing. I don't think it's legitimate to do that. I think this country is better than that. I think we have a right to hear our politicians speak, and then we make our minds up. If we don't like them, we vote against them. We vote for somebody else. That's what this is about. I want these politicians to be able to speak as long as they need to. I want to be able to look them in their eye while they're speaking. I want to be able to judge them. I want to judge the timbre of their voice, their facial expressions. I know enough about how people are credible or not. I spent 30-some years practicing law. I know when somebody's lying pretty much whenever they are, and I want to see these guys. That's why these debates are important. I want them to really debate, not answer questions just like it's a press conference. And this guy did a disservice to Mitt Romney and to the American people. I don't think you can accuse Romney of being vicious. You know, you can like him or dislike him. I'm not the biggest fan of Mitt Romney. But the basic point here is he was right. He had a right to give his speech. And this guy had no right to disrupt him. Hey, thanks very much for the call. All right, we still have time. Let's go to the next call, Susan in Chicago, listening in on WIND. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thank you. I follow Wisconsin Radio. They're doing the exact same thing to the very successful Republican governor of Wisconsin, Governor Walker. On three occasions, he's shouted down. He can't even begin his speech. Opening a new Wisconsin Highway Tourist Center, shouted down. Opening the Wisconsin State Fair about a week ago, shouted down. And they even reached a new low at a Special Olympics ceremony where they scared the children dressed up, a group dressed up as skeletons or death. It doesn't stop. It's not free speech. It's disorderly conduct, and they should be ticketed or removed by security.
No, you're absolutely right, Susan. That's exactly what needs to be done. People, politicians, I mean, Lord only knows we don't have a lot of good politicians around, but even the bad ones should have a right to speak. Mitt Romney is not one of the bad ones. He's a good guy. You know, whether you like him or not, this is, though, the problem. You see it in Wisconsin, and you pointed out very well, Susan. We see this again and again and again. You know, you see people like, not in the words that everybody else might make them, did and heckled. You never see this conduct. When was the last time someone, some liberal, went to, like Hillsdale College and was heckled and disrupted by the student body? Never happens. The liberals do this. The conservatives do not. And the problem that I have, we're going to have this more and more and more. Like I said, today, the incident with Mitt Romney is only incident number one. These guys are just getting warmed up, and we're not going to be able to do anything about it unless, as you suggest, Susan, people like that better be put in cuffs and just hauled out. Let's listen to the politicians. Let's hear them speak. Hey, thanks very much for the call. All right, we got to take another one of those break things. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Don't forget to go to michaelsavage.com. We'll be right back after the break.
Savage.
Rising up out of the bottom of the hour, Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking right now about the heckler that really went after Mitt Romney in Ames, Iowa today. It's the beginning of a campaign, a beginning of the campaign, not just from the candidates, but the people who are going to want to disrupt everything they do and say. We're going to see it all through this campaign, attacking the Republicans wherever they arise, wherever they get up to give a speech. We're going to see these people from SEIU, from Soros, from wherever they're coming from. This is the rehearsal for what we're going to see later. All right, let's get right back to the phones. Let's go to Laura in beautiful Tyler, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I have two points. First of all, I'd like to say there's a serious misunderstanding of what the right to free speech is. The heckler was interrupting Governor Romney's right to free speech. And also, he was also interfering with the crowd's right to assembly.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Laura. And, you know, you're in a good district down there. I think you're represented by my good buddy Louis Gohmert. And Louis is a very good constitutional lawyer, and I think he'll pretty much agree with what you just said. You know, the point really is the politicians have a right to speak, and it's our right, the right to freedom of assembly, the right of freedom of speech. We have a right to hear them without these clowns and thugs, and I'll use the term thugs advisedly, without these thugs going in and trying to interrupt, trying to disrupt. It's part of our political process to hear people speak, to judge them for their character, for their appearance, for the way they say things, to judge whether they're speaking truthfully or not. This is a very important point, and you're absolutely right. This guy was denying us the right to freedom of assembly, denying us the right to freedom of speech. We have a right to listen, not just to talk. And this guy, I really think he just should have been thrown out. Hey, thank you very much for the call, Laura. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there's so much else we've got to deal with. Let's go to another topic. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. We're at 800-449-8255. All right, everybody by now has heard of Operation Fast and Furious. Excuse me. The ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Foolishness, was literally letting guns be taken, be bought by straw purchasers, people who were not really supposed to buy the guns. It's an illegal purchase. They were letting them go across the Mexican border, and they really were saying, well, we're going to try to get some of the biggies in the drug cartels, not that they ever really tried. And the denouement of all of this, the real tragedy of it, is one of those guns that the Fast and Furious clowns let out, killed Border Agent Brian Terry. And his murder was linked very quickly to Operation Fast and Furious because the gun was found. Now, we've got this guy, U.S. Attorney Burke, the guy down there. His office was running part of the Fast and Furious program. Now, listen to this. Listen to this. Brian Terry's family, apparently they've arrested the guy who smuggled the gun over into Mexico. They even have in custody, I believe, the guy who actually killed Brian Terry. So now we have unusual procedure. A criminal case like this, a violent crime, the people who are the victims get to file a very routine motion with the U.S. District Court and say, if this guy is convicted, we want to be able to stand there and present our views as the victims. This guy, Burke, I can't express my contempt for him in words that are repeatable on public radio. Ladies and gentlemen, he is allowed to do anything, to make any judgments on a case involving Fast and Furious is way beyond me. I think it is very, very unethical and probably illegal at some level. But now this guy has decided to oppose the victim statement motion by Brian Terry's family. He doesn't want them to be able to be heard. Listen to this, guys. Clip 12, please.
In a motion, U.S. Attorney Dennis Burke says the family was not directly or proximately harmed by the illegal purchase of the murder weapon, that the real victim is not any particular person, but society in general. Yet earlier this year, when indicting gun buyers, Burke suggested the opposite.
That gun's going to be down in Mexico sometimes within 24 hours to be used by drug cartels in a war they're having.
Well, gee, isn't that just what happened with Fast and Furious, that your office was partially overseeing, Attorney Burke? Would you really now have the guts? Well, I guess you do. You have the guts to tell the family of this border agent, the family of Brian Terry, that they should not be able to speak if these guys are convicted? They are as much a victim as Brian Terry himself. How do you talk to Brian Terry's parents and tell them that they are not victims? How do you talk to his wife, his kids? Look, ladies and gentlemen, this is a part of something much bigger. This is much, much bigger than this clown Dennis Burke, this U.S. attorney down there, who is now trying to tell Brian Terry's family that they can't appear as making victim statements in the case there against the gun smuggler and the murderer. This is all a part of Eric Holder's most lawless Department of Justice ever, I think, in the history of the United States of America. This guy is running a Justice Department that has politicized everything. This is going from, you remember the new Black Panthers Party case from the day of the election in 2008? It was voter intimidation if there has ever been any. There was film of it. We all saw it on Fox News. There was a civil judgment against a couple of these guys, these new Black Panthers. And you know what? Eric Holder's people, not only did they refuse to go after these guys criminally, frankly, those guys ought to be behind bars for 20-plus years, they also refused to pursue a default judgment in the civil case. The whole thing went away. The new Black Panther Party got away with this. The thugs who were intimidating voters got away with it. So where are we? Where are we? We now have Eric Holder still wants to bring terrorists captured abroad into the United States for trial. Barack Obama still wants to close Gitmo. And we still have, I think, 127 or 128 of the baddest of the bad down there. He still wants to close those people, bring them into the United States. And you know what? Were it not for people like Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, and some of those folks, John Kyle of Arizona, a lot of those folks there, if it weren't for them, these guys would have done it. They've already brought a guy, you probably don't even remember this, this guy, Ahmed Warsami. He is a Somali. He's connected to Al-Qaeda. He was captured, I believe, somewhere near Somalia about 3 months ago and kept for detention and interrogation on a U.S. Navy ship for over 2 months. And what did they do? Instead of putting this guy in custody and bringing him to Gitmo and throwing him in that place where all the rest of those Al-Qaeda and Taliban types, what do? They brought him to, I think it's New York. Yeah, he's under indictment, is awaiting. Why are we even listening to these people? These people have perverted the American criminal justice system for political purposes. All right, let's go right back to your calls. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Sergio calling in from Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir.
Yes, I believe it's a bigger plan, as you said. Pressure from above, pressure from below. The pressure from above with the Eric Holder and his plot, and then also the heckling and the organization that they have at the bottom, and everybody else is caught right in the middle like a vice. For them to eventually come up with some solutions, like you have to give up some of your rights, which is ultimately what they want to do. That's just what I believe. You're seeing it with the sharp divide in this nation.
Yeah, I think that's right. You're going back to our earlier subject, Sergio, and I think there's something to what you're saying. I think it's going to be really, really hard for those people to limit our right to free speech, to cut off things like this program or Fox News. But what they're going to do is they're going to try to so saturate what we do with their content, with their interruptions, with their, as other shows call them, you know, seminar callers. This is what the left does. The left is not interested in freedom of speech. They only want freedom of speech that agrees with them. But the point that I'm making here is this goes hand in glove with what Eric Holder and the Justice Department is doing. This Fast and Furious thing was a terrible disaster. It cost American lives, including Border Agent Brian Terry. And now we have these people. This guy, Burke, ought to be removed. Somebody down there in the Texas bar ought to be making an ethics complaint against him. He should not be involved in this case. And I'll tell you what, the United States District Judge, who does not grant a motion by Brian Terry's family to get in as victim status in this case, that judge, somebody ought to take a look at impeaching him. I don't know if that motion's been ruled on yet, but this guy, Dennis Burke, is a disgusting example of political justice. All right, let's go right back to your calls. Let's go to Rick in Wisconsin. Rick, thanks for calling, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
This is just a scam. It goes all the way up to the president of the United States to ban guns. And what do you expect from a president who gets support from the Communist Party USA for his presidential election?
Well, you know, Rick, the point of the matter, I think you make a decent point in one respect. I do believe this Operation Fast and Furious is built on the desire to create more gun legislation, more gun control legislation here in the United States. And I say that for one simple reason. You remember the failure of Eric Holder's attempt to prove that all these huge numbers of guns were going down into Mexico and being used by the drug lords, and they were trying to get restrictions on the number of guns sold along the Texas-Mexico border. And that failed because we found out, and I think it was maybe even the FBI that came up with the information, and I saw some of these reports that many of the guns, I mean, maybe even a majority of the guns were coming in from places like China and Russia and a lot of places like that where, you know, you can go out and buy a fully automatic weapon, just you got the greenbacks, you can go do it. And they were importing them from all over the place. What they were trying to do with that failed. So what they did then, I believe you're right, was go to this Operation Fast and Furious in a second attempt to prove that the Mexican drug lords were being armed primarily from American gun dealers. And this also failed because they were breaking the law to do what they were trying to do. This is not a lawful administration, ladies and gentlemen. This administration, and I go back again to the Gitmo thing and all of the things we can talk about terrorist detainees and detention and interrogation, all of the things that have been going on, all of the things that have been going on to get information out of those terrorist detainees, those were not illegal when they were done. Obama still wants to treat terrorism as a crime, but he wants to treat American crimes, if they be such, as terrorism. You know, you're looking at a guy who thinks that an American gun dealer in Texas, and I'm talking about Eric Holder here, an American gun dealer in Texas to Eric Holder is more dangerous than Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. You know, these guys are more desperate to try to trap people into violating federal law. They're just going out there and sending guns down to Mexico, knowing full well the purchases are illegal. Thank heaven this thing stopped. But I come back to the point that I made at the beginning of this segment. This guy, Dennis Burke, trying to say that Brian Terry's family should not be allowed victim status in this federal district court proceeding, that to me is, it is way beyond unethical, ladies and gentlemen. Someone ought to be looking at U.S. Attorney Dennis Burke and figuring out how to get him out of office. All right, we've got to take a break, and we're going to be coming right back to your calls. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Stick with us.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage today, 800-449-8255. All right, let's go to Patrick in Pennsylvania. You're welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. I agree with you, and I think your thoughts are 100% right on with the Fast and Furious and the purpose of it. And I also wanted to remind you and our listeners that when Eric Holder was questioned a little bit deeper about what happened here in Philadelphia with the Black Panthers and the voting, if you remember, he made a statement, something to the fact that, oh, much worse has happened to my ancestors.
Well, you look, you know, the question of whether he said that or whether, and you know, it's probably he did say that. I don't dispute the fact. But the point of the matter is this man is entirely political. An attorney general is not supposed to be political. An attorney general and a president, if I might remind you, are not people who are supposed to pick and choose which laws they choose to enforce. The laws of the land are not for the president or the attorney general to ignore. This is what we have. Look, with the don't ask, don't tell thing, they decided, they just long before Congress repealed the don't ask, don't tell statute, which prohibited homosexuals from serving openly in the military, and that was a very bad move by Congress, and we're going to talk about that later today if we have the time. But even before that, Holder and Obama decided, hey, we're just not going to enforce that. We think that law is unconstitutional. So in our judgment, in our supreme judgment, don't they understand? Well, I guess they don't. Well, maybe they do. Maybe they, hey, let's just remember, Patrick, our president is a constitutional law professor. And he determined in his mind that don't ask, don't tell was unconstitutional. He determined in his legal judgment that even though we were bombing the snot out of Libya, there were no hostilities there invoking the War Powers Resolution. These people are lawless. That's one of the things that we really need to keep in mind when we work very hard to get these clowns out of office. Hey, Patrick, thanks very much for the call. I think we can get to one more before the break at the top of the hour. Let's go to, Dave in Kansas City, listening on KCMO. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir.
Thank you. None of this should surprise anybody about the new left. The new left is not the Tip O'Neill left, for example. The new left is lawless, and it practices as a default position in every case the ends justify the means. And we really don't have to look that far to really understand that. Look at the way Obamacare was passed. It was passed essentially lawlessly through some backdoor procedure basically overwhelming the will of the American people. Look at the way global warming alarmists practice advocacy. They practice suppression of opposite points of view. They try to blackball opposing scientists. They fabricate data. They shout down their opponents. It's all about the ends justifying the means, and that's no, what
and Dave,
they practice.
You're absolutely right. I would just say one thing and slight disagreement with you. What they did with Obamacare, they didn't do things illegally. You know, Congress can suspend its own rules. Congress makes its own rules. They can do darn near anything they want, subject to restraint by a presidential veto and the courts. But what they did was they lied. You know, number one, they concealed things. And we know, remember, Nancy Pelosi saying, oh, well, we've got to pass this bill in order to find out what's in it. That's their attitude. They will ride roughshod over people's legitimate concerns. They will cancel debate. They will suppress debate. That's what this clown was doing today with Mitt Romney. That's what Pelosi did in passing Obamacare. The backroom deals you justly criticize were the same kind of thing. They do not want to have sunshine scrubbing what they're doing, sunshine being a great disinfectant. No, the basic point here is they do things in the dark of night. They suppress free speech. They don't want conservatives of all people to be able to speak openly. Now, I'm not entirely sure that Mitt Romney is a conservative, but I'll tell you what, he has the right to speak. And people who disrupt speeches like that clown did in Ames, Iowa, he should have been hauled out of there in handcuffs. All right, this is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. We'll be right back after the break. Thanks for joining us.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This evening reminds us of both the timeless teachings of a great religion and the enduring strengths of a great nation. Like so many faiths, Islam has always been part of our American family, and Muslim Americans have long contributed to the strength and character of our country in all walks of life. This has been especially true over the past 10 years. In 1 month, we will mark the 10th anniversary of those awful attacks that brought so much pain to our hearts. It'll be time to honor all those that we've lost, the families who carry on their legacy, the heroes who rushed to help that day, and all who've served to keep us safe during a difficult decade. And tonight it's worth remembering that these Americans were of many faiths and backgrounds, including proud and patriotic Muslim Americans.
Welcome back. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. We're at 800-449-8255. And, of course, that was President Obama speaking at last night's iftar dinner at the White House. You need to check out the story about that on michaelsavage.com. Ladies and gentlemen, let's just talk about some of those top stories on michaelsavage.com, in particular this iftar dinner. Now, this is a theme. This is a theme that President Obama sounded in his speech in Cairo in June of 2009. Remember that big reset of the relationship between America and Islam that had been damaged so badly by President Bush? Well, Obama keeps saying this, and this one sentence just really really intrigues me. He says, quote, like so many faiths, Islam has always been a part of our American family, and Muslim Americans have long contributed to the strength and character of our country in all walks of life, end quote. Well, I beg to differ. You know, there are a lot of great American Muslims right now. I remember a couple of them that I've met. They're Marines. They're over there playing in the sandbox, fighting for their country, our country, their country. But if you look back in history, the first time America collided with Islam, it was not on friendly terms. I think it was about 1803 when the first modern jihad began, and we were on the precipice of national bankruptcy because, unlike certain European powers, we were unable to pay ransom for the ships that were hijacked in the Mediterranean, the merchant ships that were hijacked by the jihadis, the Bay of Algiers and the Tripolitan pirates. And it was a very interesting value judgment we made back then, an interesting value judgment that may have been forced upon us by economics. We couldn't afford to pay tribute like Britain and France did to the Bay of Algiers to get their ships back. Thomas Jefferson made a different choice. I guess he could have, I guess if he were Barack Obama, he probably would have imposed more taxes. Back then, we didn't have an income tax. I'm sure there would have been one if we'd had a liberal Democrat for president. So, you know, Thomas Jefferson had a different idea. He built six frigates, sent them over there, and a small band of unknown guys, a bunch of cutthroats who had gathered in Tun's Tavern in 1775, led by a young man by the name of Presley Neville O'Bannon, marched across 400 miles of desert and attacked the city of Derna. Took it within a couple of hours. That was one of the births of the United States Marine Corps. That was the birth of our relationship to Islam. And that's why I sit back and I wonder, what on earth is Barack Obama talking about? And when he talks in these terms, he's denying history. He is trying to rewrite history, which shouldn't surprise us at all. Other stories, you've got to look at michaelsavage.com. Other stories there. Really very fascinating how things have gone in Britain for, I guess, 4 days in a row. You need to read Melanie Phillips' story, London Daily Mail, about how the British intelligentsia has pretty much taken Britain apart. You know, I have a lot of friends over there. I used to go over there and visit. And, you know, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. Now the liberal intelligentsia has brought British society down, that they're doing things like banning Dr. Michael Savage from coming over there. That is more a testament about them and their denial of free speech and their surrender of their freedoms than it is any criticism of Michael Savage. All right, going right back to your Rita from Sacramento. I used to live in Sacramento when I was stationed at, I guess it's closed now, McClellan Air Force Base way back. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
What I don't understand the purpose of this dinner. What I just know is what the man is. We have an office, is a Muslim, and people keep forgetting there's good and there's bad in everybody. But this man is a devout Muslim, and that's the way he thinks. He doesn't think of a good, kind Muslim. He wants control. He wants it his way, and I feel he's an enemy.
Well, I can't say that you don't have reason to believe that, but I will tell you, I just don't get there. I just don't believe that he is a Muslim. He obviously sympathizes with Islam. I think his foreign policy is completely Islam-centric, and I think his inclinations, well, they're frankly more French than they are Muslim, because he wants to surrender. You know, he declared Sarkozy and France our biggest and best and strongest ally earlier this year. Where on earth did that come from? No, Barack Obama's values are not your values and my values. They are not the values that we hold dear in the United States of America. And again, he is running the most ideological, the most politically corrupt regime. Now, I have no evidence to say that they're financially corrupt, though they may very well be. But this is the most politically corrupt regime. How do you go about passing bills like Obamacare and saying, well, you know, they're just they're for the good of the people, like it or not? We know better. See, that's what liberalism is all about, Rita. These people believe, they always believe, that they know better than us, that they are smarter than us. I'm not even going to go into that. You know what I'm saying. The liberals, just frankly, can't be trusted. All right, on to more things. We've got so much to talk about today. Well, you know, if you were listening to the news today, you might or might not have heard, but the super committee has now been fully formed. We have the deal made in the debt ceiling negotiations. Remember the budget bill that has not been passed? The debt ceiling bill said, well, we're going to make these little cuts. We're going to make these little cuts in federal spending. And, oh, yeah, someday, we are going to cut the federal budget. And that's why Standard & Poor's threw the little red BS flag at it, because they said, hey, look, guys, you're cutting $21 billion in 2012. I mean, it's nothing. You spill more than that any given day. You're cutting $42 billion in 2013. When are you going to get serious? And they didn't trust our politics, and for good reason. That's why we have the Obama downgrade. But let's remember, in that same debt ceiling deal, in that negotiation and in the legislation, we now have this group of 12 senators, or rather 12 congressmen, six senators, three from each party, and six congressmen, three from each party. They are supposed to meet. They are going to be meeting between now and November. They're supposed to report on $1.2 trillion in savings, federal spending cuts, that will occur over the next decade in order to comply with that deal. You know, and I know, they're going to either deadlock or they're going to give away the store. Now, we're going to be talking about this a lot in the next half hour, but let me just run down for you the names. Now we know who's there. Well, before we even get to that, let's see why and how people were thinking in their appointment of the members to this committee. Listen to Senator Mitch McConnell. I know a lot of conservatives have some big questions about him, but I know the man. I've talked to him many, many times. He is a good, solid conservative. He is a masterful tactician. But I got to tell you, when he said what he said about what he's looking for to appoint people to this super committee, I really had a heart attack. Listen to Mitch McConnell on what he was going to do. Clip 18, please, guys.
I'm approaching it with a desire to get an outcome and an understanding that the perfect solution, from my point of view, is not going to emerge in a government that my party only controls one-third of. So that's the way I'm approaching it, and I'm not going to make any announcements today, but I'm very close to naming my three, and these will be people that I have trust and confidence in.
Well, okay. And again, I am not one to distrust Mitch McConnell, but I've got to wonder if we're looking to get an outcome, that means that we're prepared to compromise. And okay, that may be something you can do, but it can't be done with these people. Nancy Pelosi, and I don't think we have the audio of this, but Nancy Pelosi was saying the standards for the people she was picking. Number one, focus on economic growth and job creation that reduces the deficit. Oxymoron. Number two, make decisions regarding investments, cuts, and revenues and their timing to stimulate growth while reducing the deficit. Again, more spending, revenues, tax increases. Number three, increase demand by offering recommendations that ensure that wages grow with productivity and reduce America's families' dependence on credit. More federal spending. Those are the things that she's looking for. More taxes, more spending, just like the president said in one of his speeches today in Holland, Michigan. He was saying, well, yeah, we're going to have more stimulus. These people you can't compromise with. Senator McConnell, I love you, buddy, but I think in this point, I'm not sure you went in with the right criteria. All right, we're going to have to take one of those break things, and we're going to come right back to your calls. We're at 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Stick with us.
Savage.
We're back. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage today. This is the Savage Nation. We're at 800-449-8255, talking to you right now. Let's go to Cecil Ann, listening to us on 104.9 WBUV. I think that's out of Biloxi, Mississippi. Cecil Ann, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Now, I was just listening to one of the callers talking about the dinner that President Obama spoke to last night. And, you know, it doesn't really make any difference if they're Muslim, if they're Jew. I mean, President Bush did the same thing. And, you know, nobody should think anything differently about him speaking just because some people still think he's a Muslim, which really blows my mind, because you'd think after 3 years that would have been put to rest, which to me, what difference does it make if he is or he isn't?
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But, I mean, it's just, I can't comprehend, and I am a Democrat. I'm not a, there's a difference to me between a Democrat and a liberal. I'm not liberal.
Oh.
I am a
Democrat. Cecil Ann, you must be, and forgive me for asking, ma'am, but you must be over, say, 35,
yeah.
Because there aren't any moderates in your party anymore, ma'am. I mean, if you are a Democrat, you are a liberal these days. If you are a Democrat, you signed on with Teddy Kennedy and Chuckie Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Obama and all the rest of these guys. You can't be a moderate and be a Democrat. Cecil Ann, you're smarter than that, aren't you?
Well, I am. I'm listening to both sides, but I know what I have listened to on Fox and on the other cable stations, CNN, MSNBC, and from my point of view, and I'm sure I'm biased because I am liberal.
Okay, so you are a liberal. All right, I'm just wanting to make that clear. You were saying you were a moderate, and I was just making the point was that you can't be a moderate and be a Democrat. Okay, you're a liberal. That's fine. But the point that you were making about Obama and the issue of the dinner, you know, I would not have so much a problem with that, number one, if he was speaking the truth, and the truth is not that Islam has been a part of America all along. Islam has, from at least 1804, had a very unfriendly, maybe warlike relationship with the United States. You know, the point also is Obama does not have a Passover dinner in the White House. He does not go and attend services. I think, well, maybe he does once in a while. I don't believe he goes to a Christian church to observe Easter, things like that. He just takes off. He goes on holidays. If he were observing every major religion in the United States with equal fervor, with equal dignity, I think that would be a very different situation. But Cecil Ann, he doesn't. He concentrates on Islam because it is his belief that Islam can be seduced to support the United States, or maybe that the United States can be seduced to support Islam's gains around the world. I'm not sure which he really believes, because I don't believe very much of what that man tells us.
Well, I do. I think he could be, if given just a tiny chance. The Republicans have already said they're not.
Oh, he's had 3 years, Cecil Ann, of 2.5 years of government. How much chance do we have to give him? This guy owns the war. He owns the economy. He owns the downgrade. I mean, you can't give him any more excuses. He's had his chance. And what has he done? He's jammed Obamacare down our throats. He has spent $4 trillion of our money. He spent not just my money and your money. He spent my kids' money. He spent my grandchildren's money. We are going to be 100 years recovering from this guy. Please, number one, I'm very glad that you owned up to the fact that you are a liberal, and please do me a favor, don't ever try to pass yourself off again as something else, because that's not what you are, and I think you want to be a truthful person. But let's not pretend that Obama hasn't had a chance. Let's not pretend that Obama needs more time. He's had 2.5 years. He has brought this country to the brink of economic ruin. It's time to get this clown out of office. And I wish the election in November 2012 were tomorrow. Unfortunately, it's not. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
As you know, Congressman Cleaver said this is a Satan sandwich.
It probably is, with some Satan fries on the side. But nonetheless, it's something that we have to do.
Diane Sawyer talking to Miss Pelosi about the new super committee. And, you know, we have really set the stage for all of this, ladies and gentlemen. We know what Pelosi and Obama and Harry Reid are trying to do. They're trying to raise taxes. Now, what are the Republicans trying to do? Let's just look at the people who are on the committee from both sides. In the Senate, on the Republican side, we have John Kyle of Arizona, very, very conservative, tough guy. He's retiring. Will he go statesman on us? Who knows? Rob Portman, freshman from Ohio, former OMB director for George Bush. That's not something that gives me a lot of comfort. And Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, pretty tough guy, pretty conservative. Let's see. On the Democrat side in the Senate, we have Patty Murray, as liberal as Pelosi is, the granny in tennis shoes from Washington State. She is also, oh, by the way, the chairwoman of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. So what's she looking at? She's looking at making this a campaign issue. Jean-Francois Kerry of Massachusetts is the second member from the Democrat side in the Senate. He, of course, will be there. I wonder if he's going to reprise his wonderful performance in 1972 at the Winter Soldier investigation, when he was talking about how American soldiers were running around Vietnam raping, pillaging, and murdering, like, I think the term he used, Genghis Khan. And, of course, we have Max Baucus from whatever boring state he's from. On the House side, this is not so bad. On the House side, we have Dave Camp of Ohio. He's chairman, I think, of Ways and Means. Very good guy. Know him well. He's very conservative, very tough, and very smart. Jeb Hensarling from Texas. Again, very smart, very conservative, pretty tough. Fred Upton of Michigan. This is the guy who tried to actually did help the Democrats outlaw incandescent light bulbs. He's chairman of, I think, the Energy and Commerce Committee. He's a disaster. So we've got some good guys, some not so wonderful guys. What's missing on the Republican side in the United States Senate, for example, is how about Jeff Sessions? He's really tough. He is really smart. And he is also, oh, by the way, the ranking Republican on the Senate Budget Committee. So he knows more about this stuff. I think Mitch McConnell should have appointed him. Well, and you know what's really glaring? I think Mr. Boehner, the Speaker of the House, it would not have taken much for him to remember this tall, dark-haired guy from Wisconsin, the wavy hair, the younger guy. Yeah, oh, yeah, Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee. Why isn't he on this super committee? Well, you've got some other people on the House side. Ms. Pelosi has come up with some real choice dudes and dudettes. Well, we have, of course, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. I guess he's kind of a milquetoastish kind of guy. I mean, most of the Maryland representatives and senators are. Listen to clip 11. This is Van Hollen thinking about, well, you know, they're not going to let the economy go into a tank.
The president has said that's a priority. We need to move forward. If you don't lift the debt ceiling, every economist out there has said that the economy will tank. And what is really appalling is to see our Republican colleagues essentially providing a form of extortion.
Extortion? Oh, yeah, I remember that. Extortion. That was like before Biden in the closed Democratic caucus mentioned that Republicans and the Tea Party members were acting like terrorists. These are the nice people that we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. These are the people who you got to cut a deal with. You can't cut a deal with them. And just as an example of what we're talking about here, listen to Congressman James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina, another member of the Super Committee. He will not be confused with Batman or Spider-Man or Superman. Clyburn, this is just listen to a couple of the things he said during the debate. This clip 8, please, guys.
He should sign an executive order invoking the 14th Amendment and send that to all the governmental agencies for us to continue to pay our bills. He could do that with the stroke of a pen. We've seen many big things done in history that way.
Okay, that was July 28th, talking to MSNBC's Jansing and Company. Well, Mr. Clyburn, I know it may come as a shock to you, but the 14th Amendment doesn't allow the president to do that. What the 14th Amendment says is that the debt authorized by law shall never be denied. That's the point. You know, you just misread it, Mr. Clyburn. But this is the guy, not only is he so far out and so far liberal that he thought the president of the United States could invoke the Constitution and just raise the debt ceiling himself. Well, listen to what Clyburn is joking about. Listen to this. You just can't believe this guy. Clip 9, please.
I joked with my staff the other day. Tell me, what was the bill number of the Emancipation Proclamation? It was an executive order. We integrated the armed service by executive order. We integrated public schools by executive order. Sometimes executives must order that things get done.
Yeah, I guess if you take that view, I mean, Mr. Clyburn, I suppose, would have been very, very comfortable in Imperial Rome with Caligula. You know, maybe just doing things by executive order appeals to him more than following the laws of the United States. This is what liberals think, ladies and gentlemen. This is the way they think. And now we have this guy and Van Hollen and Javier Becerra of Texas, another raving, very, very liberal guy. We've got Patty Murray, Vichy John Kerry, Max Baucus, and these guys are the people with whom the Republicans are going to try to make a deal to cut $1.2 trillion off the deficit over 10 years. The deadlock is imminent. It won't take long. They will not be able to reach any agreement because you can't deal with these people. And the question is how long? Pardon me, is this going to drag out? How long is this charade going to go on? The problem we've got, of course, is once they get to the point where they are deadlocked, when they pass Thanksgiving, when the time comes to put an up or down vote on their recommendations, what are the Republicans going to do? If they have a compromise, let me tell you what they should do. What they should do is vote it down. That's the only way you can stop these guys from raising taxes and continuing the spending spree. If they vote it down and you have this trigger mechanism, you know what? Let's go after it then. Let's get a new piece of legislation going. The Democrats are never going to abide by this deal anyway. You know it. I know it. Every single bill that comes up in the Senate, that passes the Senate between now and then, they're going to try to sneak something in to raise federal spending, to raise taxes. They may call it user fees. They make whatever. They're going to try to do all these things constantly. The Republicans have to be just as bold. Remember why we have the Standard & Poor's downgrade. It's because Congress doesn't live up to its promises. We know that. Standard & Poor's knows that. The financial markets know that. That's why we have $2.4 trillion, maybe $4 trillion. We have to shave off federal spending. The Republicans right now ought to start whittling away at the federal budget. They could stop spending one agency at a time. You know how you do that? You don't have a budget, so you can't invoke the Budget Act. The Democrats haven't passed a budget through the Senate through, I don't know, what, 830 days by now, more than 2.5 years. They will never do it if they can possibly get away with it. They will never do it, and they can get away with it. The Republicans can stop authorizing and appropriating. That's the only way to do it. Come up with a list of agencies, come up with a list of programs, zero them out. Pass the legislation, pass an appropriation, pass an authorization. That's the only way we're going to ever get a handle on this. We're sure not going to do it through this super committee. All right, I'm sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. I think it's very important because you cannot deal with these people. All right, we're at 800-449-TALK. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Let's go right back to your calls. Let's go to Joel in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Listening in. Welcome to the Savage Nation, Joel.
Thank you very much. I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. I've been listening. I'm 24. I've been listening since 2001 after 9/11.
Good man.
And I view myself as a kind of an anomaly, if you will, in terms of politics.
I'm rather conservative on a national front, being the fact I'm in the military. However, on a state front, I really think that's kind of where it's okay-ish. And I use that rather, you know, I use it rather carefully to be a little bit more liberal than you would on a national front. I personally think that, you know, states really need to start doing what the federal government is in that, all right, every single state has a Department of Natural Resources. We don't need an overarching EPA to monitor or to have, you know, 20-some thousand people
all right,
involved.
Joel, what you're doing here is you're coming, your political evolution. You're a young guy, you're in the military, and God bless you for your service. What you're doing is the same kinds of things that a lot of people have done at your age. You're evolving into a conservative. What you're talking about is federalism. What we're talking about is the fundamental basis of the United States government. The idea that the things that are not in the Constitution, the things that are not the absolute duties of the federal government stated in the Constitution, are things that the federal government shouldn't be doing at all. You know who is the guy who fervently believes in that? I know fairly well. Virginia's Governor Robert McDonnell. He was Attorney General, and he is now the governor. I've met the governor many, many times. I sat with him during his campaign. This is a guy who believes as follows. This is a guy who believes that if you go through the federal agencies and the federal budget, what you should do is cancel out everything that the federal government is not supposed to be, is not asked to do or tasked to do in the United States Constitution. And by doing that, you would probably reduce the size of government by, 75%. That's what you're talking about, Joel, isn't it? You're talking about having the states do things that the federal government isn't constitutionally charged and responsible to do. Isn't that about right? Isn't that where you're going?
Right. And I guess the only liberal thing I truly believe in is something that a lot of Republicans have basically hated me for, is the fact I happen to be a little bit pro-union. I'm not a militant unionist, but at the same time, I do think that workers have rights, and I believe that unions are a bridge between management and labor. Have they fallen off that path?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Joel, let me tell you, I think that unions have a legitimate place in our society, and I think unions, if they are not abusive of their power, can be a positive influence. But when you look at what's going on, here again, you have the Obama administration being entirely lawless, all right? You look at what's going on with Boeing building a new plant in South Carolina. That plant has been under construction for, I think, at least 2 years. They poured a couple of $100 million, well, maybe $100 million into it to build it. They're hiring people there by the thousands. Why? And one reason why is they want to get away from the high wages they're paying in Washington State. Number two, they want to get into a right-to-work state. And why? Are the people in Washington now saying you don't have the right to do that? The Obama administration is lawless, Joel. They are taking the words of the law and twisting and turning and making them into something else. Boeing should be able to move to South Carolina. The NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, should not be able to do that. I'm not saying we should outlaw unions. I don't think any Republican would say that. But the point of the matter is, under the Obama administration, you have a lawless government using things like unions for its own purpose. Joel, we've got to go. Thanks very much for the call. And you know what? Keep listening. Keep watching. Keep reading. People of your age, I mean, God bless you. You are a sponge for information. You've got to be the kind of person who will learn everything. Read history. Read politics. Keep involved. People in this country are going to depend on you, even in addition to your military service. All right, Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Got to take a quick break. We're at 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin. We'll be right back.
Savage.
But simply, we must be the America that goes forward as one family, like generations before us, pulling together in times of trial, staying true to our core values, and emerging even stronger. This is who we are. This is who we must always be. tonight as we near a solemn anniversary. I cannot imagine a more fitting wish for our nation. So God bless you all, and God bless the United States of America.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Don't forget to check out the top stories on michaelsavage.com. That, of course, President Obama at the iftar dinner the other night, talking about how America is going forward as one family. Wow. I mean, maybe he means like the Adams family or some dysfunctional Hollywood family. Where's Roseanne? I don't get this guy. Well, actually, I do, and that's the benefit to us and all of us around here because we do get this guy. We understand him. He is not on our page. He wants to ruin our country, and he's got a really good start doing it. All right, let's go right back to your calls at 800-449-8255. Let's see. How about Fred in Chicago? Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I don't think the economy's got anything to do with Obama or the Democrats. The country's economy has been going down for years, and it's because of allowing Wall Street and big business to do what they want, ship jobs out of the country, do what they want.
What do you think? Whoa. Let me just ask you. Let's set aside the issue of whether Obama has involvement for spending like $4 trillion in the past 2.5 years. But let me ask you, what would you do? If you were president of the United States, how would you change the economy? What would you do for those bad businessmen? What would you do?
Huh? What would I do?
What would you do? Yeah, what would you do? I mean, I'm asking you to do something that our president has never done, which is come up with his own plan. Okay, he keeps wanting people to come up with plans and plans and plans. I'm still waiting for him to come up with one. What's your plan? You want to punish these businessmen, right? What do you want to do to them?
Government interference in big business. I thought you wanted
what, you said that you wanted to have these guys reined in, right? You're blaming the economy on people who send jobs overseas and on Wall Street. Well, what do you want to do to correct this?
You're the one that doesn't want government to interfere.
No. You're just a typical liberal, Fred. I love this. Liberals never have an answer. They never want to admit to what they want to do. All right, thanks for the call. Let's drop this guy. Look, this is what you get from liberals. They want to criticize. Nothing's ever Obama's fault. Nothing's Obama's fault. We're not burdened with $50 billion of extra costs by Obamacare. Obamacare didn't cut $500 billion out of Medicare. Yeah, it did. Yeah, we are. That's the point. These guys can't deal with reality. And that's why making a deal with them in this super committee is going to be impossible. All right, let's go back to your calls, 800-449-8255. Dan in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, pleasure to talk to you, Jeff. This president, there's not a sandbox big enough for this president's crap. I'm so tired of listening to this stuff. But, it's like the caller two calls ago. The problem is this country used to be pretty normal. The problem is this country needs a damn rabies shot in 212. You're dealing with Marxists. You're not dealing with liberals. You're dealing with Marxist communists. And when people realize that, they'll get their head out of their you-know-what.
Well, Dan, I love you. You really are right. I guess we do need kind of a rabies shot. It's like somebody needs to grab America by the collar and just shake us awake. I think the Tea Party kind of has that right. And, I love what Rick Santelli said just, I think it was yesterday or maybe this morning. He said, we'd have a triple B rating if it weren't for the Tea Party. America has awakened. The problem is people are running out of steam a little bit. We got to get them fired up again. That's what this show is about. Dan, thanks very much for calling in. Jed Babin for Michael. Questions you won't hear in tonight's debate. Jed Babin sitting in for the good Dr. Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We're at 800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage tonight. Dr. Michael Savage, thank you again, sir, for letting me your microphone for the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go to michaelsavage.com and check out all the top stories. All right, we got a lot more to talk about this hour, and we're going to come right back to your calls. Let's go to Tom in Sacramento. This is the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say to any liberal people that might be listening out there, and Republicans for that matter too, that, you know, the best place to get unfiltered facts, in my opinion, is C-SPAN. And listening to the House or the Congress, House of Representatives talking Democratic and Republican, it was so crystal clear that the Democrats don't have anything to say other than allegories and speaking in metaphors. And if you listen to what they're saying, they want to just keep on riding the gravy train and keep on producing pork for the budgets. And you listen to Paul Ryan, and he's a very common sense, likable, you know, reasonable negotiating type person. And I don't know how anybody can see it differently than that.
Well, I think you're right, Tom. The problem we've got, and this is really a problem I think most Americans have, unless you're a retired person or, you know, an invalid sitting in a hospital or something, you don't have the time to sit there and listen to this stuff all day. I mean, I trust if you're working, you can't pay attention to this stuff because it drones on and on and on. What you're saying is very right. And sometimes when I have the time, I do just that if there's a key issue being debated. The problem is people have to have this boiled down for them. And that's why we need talk radio. That's why we need Fox News. That's why we need people who are writing for places, you know, like I write for, the American Spectator and Real Clear Politics, so people can have this digested and get to them. Democrats haven't had a new idea since Bobby Kennedy died. So what they do is they rely on the media to lead them. And then you have Barack Obama, not as a leader, but someone giving grand pronouncements. And that's what they need. That's all they need. The only thing that you need to know about liberals is the only thing they ever want to do is grow government. That's what they're about. Raise taxes, grow up government, get more power over your personal life. Hey, Tom, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to next caller, Judy in Miami. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Thank you for calling in, ma'am.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fired up. I hope you are, too.
I heard you talking about this committee. Why would we, whoever came up with this idea? That they're the reason we're in this. They can't solve the problem. We need to get a David Walker. We need somebody outside of Congress to do this work that knows about money. John Kerry?
Yeah, the problem. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, John Kerry, it's a joke. The problem is, Judy, they try this all the time. They have these blue ribbon commissions. I mean, we just had the Simpson-Bowles Commission earlier this year, or was it late last year? I forget, because they all run together. You know, it was Barack Obama's commission. They were supposed to come up with a budget plan and a way to cut the deficit, cut federal spending, and they came out with a report. It wasn't a great report. It took too much out of defense, but Barack Obama ignored his own commission. And we're, like I said earlier, about 840 days since the Democrats in the Senate have passed a budget. This is the problem. You probably can't trust these guys, but you know what? These are the people who are elected to do this job. If they can't do it, we need to just vote them out and start all over again. All right, let's go on to another topic. Ladies and gentlemen, you're probably aware of all of the controversy, and I do mean controversy, surrounding the killing of Osama bin Laden. SEAL Team 6, more appropriately known as Naval Special Warfare Development Group, a group of those very brave men, went in there, got that guy, shot him to pieces very elegantly, and took the body back. to the United States Air Force, rather to the U.S. Navy carrier, where he was wrapped in some sort of a shroud and dumped over the side to become fish food. Well, now, of course, the Obama administration, in a matter that is really mind-boggling to me. Now, some of you probably know me, the risk that informing some of you who don't. I am a former Air Force officer. For a while, I served as a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, and I've had some security clearances at some pretty high levels. Let's leave it at that. But you don't, never, ever, ever give top-secret information to the press. You don't ever, ever, ever share top-secret information with the Hollywooden heads. That's exactly what Obama is doing. These people, this Catherine Bigelow, who made The Hurt Locker, pretty good movie, pretty wild movie about a bomb disposal unit in Iraq. She is now getting cooperation from the White House, from Special Operations Command at the direction of the White House, from the Navy SEALs at the direction of the White House, to make a movie about the raid that killed bin Laden. And, gee, it's just a coincidence, don't you know, that it's going to be released about a month before the election next year. This whole thing is an absolute scandal. It is a scandal because these people in Hollywood are being given information that nobody outside of the SEAL community, not even most of the people in the White House, should be able to have access to. And now she's making this movie to suck up to bin Laden. Not to bin Laden, to Obama. You know, this is the problem. They're going to make an hour and a half or 2 hour long campaign commercial, and I'll bet you this thing is going to come out like it was Obama himself who parachuted into Abbottabad and shot bin Laden in the head. That's where we're going to come out with this thing. Listen to what Jennifer Griffin of Fox News said about this. Play the Griffin cut, please, guys.
In a twist, Fox News has learned that the last time the Pentagon collaborated with Catherine Bigelow on her previous film, the Oscar award-winning Hurt Locker, their advisors had to pull out at the last minute because of changes to the script that were made at the last minute, breaking an artistic agreement between the Pentagon and Bigelow.
One
example, I'm told, Bigelow shot scenes in a Palestinian refugee camp in Jordan, taking a U.S. American Humvee vehicle with an American flag on it into that refugee camp in order to shoot angry crowd scenes.
Well, that's all you really need to know about Catherine Bigelow. And that's all you really need to know about why they should not be allowed to have this information. This stuff is going to get twisted. It's going to get leaked. Whether or not it even gets into the movie, the stuff that you put in Catherine Bigelow's hands is going to become public knowledge. There's going to be articles written. There are going to be things that are going to be leaked. You can't trust these people with that kind of information. Now, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, it's probably legal at some level for Obama to authorize this. He's the president of the United States. The president is the ultimate authority on classification. If he wants to declassify something, he can do that. I remember with some considerable pain how the SR-71 Blackbird reconnaissance hypersonic aircraft was leaked by Lyndon Johnson. I remember how it was intentionally put out that the F-117 stealth fighter bomber existed. All of those things, you know, there are national decisions on things like that, but this is not like that. This is not like that at all. If they let out the details of this mission, it may endanger lives. It will certainly expose the methods by which SEAL teams work, and we just don't need the bad guys to know that. And now, what they're doing, making this as a campaign commercial for Barack Obama, you can't shame the shameless, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just tell you one thing before I end up blowing off steam about this. I have been working for many, many years in support of a particular military charity. Now, we all grieve for and remember the 30 men who were killed in that shoot down of a Chinook helicopter in Afghanistan last weekend. Now, about 17 of those guys were SEALs, probably from development group. There were five others who were from either other SEAL teams or from other units attached to them. There were others, American soldiers, American Air Force personnel, total of 30. Now, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation exists solely to take the children of fallen Special Operations troops and counsel them all through their younger years, to give them all sorts of benefits to make sure they get into a good college, and then pays the full ride to give them a scholarship through the best college they can get into. I'm very proud to support this organization, and I would ask you to think about them. Yesterday, the board of directors of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation held a meeting. They decided to extend their benefits to the children of all 30 of the men who died in that helicopter crash, in that shootdown. Whether they're special operators or not, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation is going to find those kids, is going to help them grow, and they're going to get them into a college and pay a full scholarship for them. If you can find it in your hearts to help do that, please go to the website www.specialops.org, www.specialops.org, and donate. It's a four-star charity. I give to them. I volunteer for them. I raise money for them every year. Please check them out. Let's say no to Catherine Bigelow and say yes to helping the children of the brave men who gave their lives last weekend. All right, coming back with a lot more on the Michael Savage Show. Jed Babin at 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage tonight. We're at 800-449-8255, and don't forget to go to michaelsavage.com and check out the top stories. All right, let's get right back to your calls. Let's go to Dennis in Phoenix, listening to us on KFYI. Dennis, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. My comment today is that there is definitely a disconnect between what was promised the American people when Barack Obama campaigned as the next 44th president of the United States, and to the degree that he has failed to produce, as well as, it appears, as Michael has said, a complete disregard for our free enterprise system engine, economic engine, that requires protection and tariffs if necessary, especially Chinese imports. I don't hear anybody in our Congress or in the White House talking about protecting the American worker that needs protection in order for them to not only survive, but to thrive as we have known it in our past. It's as if we're supposed to get dementia and forget what our country was how it was created and how it's maintained all these years. This is unacceptable.
Well, Dennis, I hear you, and two things. Number one, I only wish that Obama had forgotten the free enterprise system, because if he had, he would not have put such a burden on it by overspending, by growing the federal deficit by $4 trillion in 2.5 years, and also by burdening us with new and really horrific regulatory burdens. You know, if he had left the free market system alone, that would have been a lot better than what he's done. I don't agree with you, though. The issue of tariffs is not the way to protect the American worker. The American worker, no matter how much you raise the tariffs, unless you just basically ban all imports, which will reduce us even further to our economic penury and put us in a real depression. Think about what the Smoot-Hawley tariffs did in the 1930s. And now Barack Hussein Hoover may very well try to do the same thing, but it will not protect the American worker. What protects the American worker is innovation and growth. Everybody keeps saying, I love it when Ali Velshi goes off on one of his tangents on CNN. Oh, well, why aren't interest rates rising? You know, this whole thing, the downgrade is false, and the stock market shouldn't be falling. Well, you know what, Ali, if you had any understanding of economics, I'm just an amateur. I don't know economics like people like Larry Kudlow or Art Laffer. What I know is you don't have scarce money because there's no growth, because our economy has stagnated. We're dead in the water. We had 1.4% GDP growth in the first quarter. We had 0.3% GDP growth in the second quarter of this year. We are dead in the water. We are headed towards a second recession, maybe as long as a depression. The fact of the matter is the government doesn't need to do anything except get the hell out of the way and let industry grow. The fact is we don't need more interference from the government. We don't want more interference from the government. Industry is doing pretty well. And industry would do an awful lot better if money were out there. And think about this, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things that people just don't seem to understand, money is not an infinite quantity. All right? Money can be made. Wealth can be made. But money, there's just so much out there. Yeah, the government can print some and you know, raise the interest rates and so forth. But, you know, the basic point here is the interest rates are low. The money supply is out there. Nobody's trying to borrow. Businesses are not borrowing because they don't know where the economy is going, because the economy has been made so unstable by this regime we have in the White House, and because they just don't know what the law is going to be in the next quarter or the next year. Many, many years ago, I worked for a large aerospace company, and I learned the biggest secret that's no secret at all. Businesses like to plan. They like to invest. They will spend their money. They will create jobs. But they have to know a couple of things. They have to know what the tax rates are going to be. They have to know what the regulations are going to be that they're going to have to work within. And right now, thanks to the Obama administration and thanks to the instability in this economy which it has brought about, nobody knows. This is what's lacking, ladies and gentlemen. Stability in our economic environment. We don't have it. We sure aren't going to get it with this guy in office. That's why it's so very important. Only one of the many reasons it's so very important to get Barack Obama retired next year. All right, Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We're going to take a break and come right back to your calls. We're at 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Okay, you've had your chance. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I'm going to see what you're going to say.
Well, I'll tell you, the way this is going to work is that you get to ask your question, I get to give my answer. If you don't like my answer, you can vote for someone else. But now it's my turn to give my answer. I'm not going to raise taxes. That's my answer. I'm not going to raise taxes. And if you want somebody that can raise taxes, you can vote for Barack Obama. But let me tell you what Barack Obama's doing. Barack Obama is killing this economy. Barack Obama's is why 25 million people don't have jobs and can't find jobs. And the
Wall Street, by the way.
Okay, next question. We got another question. I got to give it over here. Yes, sir. You've had your turn. I've had my turn.
That's the way to handle it. Mitt Romney today in Ames, Iowa. Well, leading up to the big, big, big debate. I'm Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage at 800-449. We're going to see eight Republican presidential wannabes all up on stage talking about, well, probably just talking about the economy, because that's where the focus is. Obviously, the economy is going to be the biggest issue next year. But let me suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, there are other issues out there that not only are as equally important as the economy, but are also equally a vulnerability for Barack Obama. I'm talking about defense and national security issues, and I'd like you to go to my column about precisely this, www.realclearpolitics.com. It's up there today, and it's all about starting the defense debate. My point is that there are some questions that Obama really needs to be flushed out of the woodwork on. This guy does not want to deal with issues like the fact that he's about to slash military spending again, like the fact that his own now departed Defense Secretary Bob Gates was saying you can't cut anymore from defense without cutting roles, missions, and capabilities. So let me just throw a couple of ideas at you, a couple of questions that ought to be asked tonight. Now, I know the economic questions are going to predominate, but I would hope that one of our friends from the Washington Examiner or from Fox News, moderator Brett Baer, one of these guys would throw some of these questions at them. Let's just go to the issue of defense spending. And the super committee we talked about, the super committee, if it deadlocks, and the trigger mechanism is pulled, it may try to take another $600 to $700 billion out of the defense budget over the next 10 years, in addition to the $400 billion Barack Obama has already taken out. Now, there's a problem with that. Sure, I think, and you know, I am as round-heeled for the armed services as anybody you're going to want to see. But the basic point is, even I will admit there are some things in the defense budget that probably can be cut. But the issue is, how do you do it? How do you make sure that you're cutting fat and not muscle? What Obama does is precisely the opposite. He does as follows. He says, well, we're going to cut $400 billion. Go find a way to do it. In that, and what Bob Gates did, in that is no analysis of the threats. I mean, what are we up against out there? How serious is the threat from Pakistan or Iran? How serious is the threat of cyber war? What do you have to have in the presidential toolbox, in the Pentagon toolbox, to be able to do these things? What you do, what we used to do in the good old days, and for the purposes of this conversation, the good old days shall be defined as the period of 1981 to 1988, we had a process called defense guidance, whereby we would measure the threats, we would measure what we had, figure out what the difference was, and go buy it. Maybe sometimes you'd retire stuff we don't need anymore. Maybe some things we would just have too much of. And maybe some things we had to spend a lot of money in researching and developing. That's how we stayed ahead of the arms race. That's how we stayed ahead of the Soviet Union. That's how we kept America safe since World War II. Pretty safe. The question now to these people up on the stage and a number of other questions. The first question is, if the Pentagon budget is going to be cut, how would you determine what should be cut and what shouldn't? Is there a bottom line below which the Pentagon budget can't be cut? I think there is. There's another question. There's a whole bunch on my piece on realclearpolitics.com. One other that I think needs to be asked. These things, these questions need to be developed between the presidential candidates in the primary season. They can hone their arguments. They can figure out in the debate, in the contests that they are holding amongst themselves, they can develop which are the most important questions and which are the ones that will be brought ahead and presented and made a situation that Obama has to answer in the presidential campaign. One more before I get back to your calls, and I will suggest one more. It is the question of Iraq and Afghanistan and nation building. You know, when David Petraeus was commander of the forces in Iraq and later in Afghanistan, he always said that our gains there, our accomplishments, were fragile and reversible. And now if you look at what's going on in Iraq, accelerated violence, more violent than it has been in years. Afghanistan, according to the military's April 2011 report to Congress, after 9.5 years of war, less than half of the population lives in areas that are governed by anything other than the Taliban. We have not seen nation building succeed. So what do you do next? My question, one of my questions to these people up on stage tonight would be, do you believe that nation building was the right strategy? What strategy would you follow from now on to ensure that neither Iraq or Afghanistan becomes the base for the next 9/11 attack on the United States? Those are questions, ladies and gentlemen, these people need to debate. They need to start debating right now, because if they don't, they're not going to be ready for the presidential campaign. They're not going to be ready to take on Barack Obama. All right, let's get back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Let's go to Raphael in Orlando. This is the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Yeah, the president has been the right man for the commander-in-chief in that we elected a problem solver, whereas that his approach to the solutions, unfortunately, are so great, and that others before him don't actually put in the time and effort seriously to attack those problems to find a solution. Whereas,
Raphael, wait a minute, wait. What solutions has Barack Obama put forward to the war, for example? Have we won in Iraq? What's his solution? You're crediting him with solutions that have never come out, just are not there. This is a man who's gone through, since April through August, he's gone through without presenting a single plan on deficit reduction, not a single plan on the budget. Where are these big solutions you claim he's gotten up Where are they?
The problems are so vast and so great
that
one person, one administration, it's a concerted effort.
It's what's a concerted effort? He has not made an effort. He doesn't come up with an idea.
Oh.
Raphael, you're talking nonsense, pal.
It's a concerted effort because you have too many entities involved in the problem. It's just not a
problem. Wait a minute. Wait. So none of the results here. We elected a problem solver. He's done a really good job, and he needs to be reelected. Is that what you're telling me?
Of course.
Of course. Well, Raphael, sorry, I didn't mean to mock your voice that way. That was rude of me. I apologize for that. But I'm not going to apologize for cutting you off right now because what you're spouting is nonsense. Thank you very much for the call. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Barack Obama's constituency. People in denial. People who will not really look at the facts, won't look at the facts at all. Obama has failed because Obama has not even tried. And when he has tried, he's tried to do precisely the wrong things. Obama compounded Bush's mistakes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Nation building has failed. Obama hasn't even done anything to try to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. I could go on and on and on. Instead of doing that, 800-449-8255. Let's go to our next call. How about Clarence in Athens, Georgia? Thank you very much for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
My call.
Yes, sir.
Total different stance than your last caller. As an African-American male, I would just simply say that most of you all give Obama more credit than he deserves. I believe that he was a neophyte, alien, puppet president put in place to do a kamikaze mission on the U.S. economy. And
Let me just ask. All right, I'm not going to argue with you yet, Clarence, but who put him in? I mean, you're giving me something now that I have not heard before. You think this is some Manchurian candidate? Who put him in there?
I believe that from George Soros to all the other political elite who began the process, even George Bush being in the office to take the economy down, to bring in the social conflict theory, turning all the races against one another, dumbing down our educational system, creating race.
But who's doing all this? You think George Soros put George Bush in office to set it up so that Obama could come in?
No,
I'm just trying to probe where your thoughts are going.
Basically, many organizations like the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, many others, have been working systematically for many years toward this endeavor. And as a result, right now, they've used, it went beyond Karl Marx, which most commentators say, as a socialist program. The next level is Ralph Dorndorf, by which every social fiber and institution turn against one another. And I think he's done an effective job of scare and fear-mongering to turn the American populace against themselves. And as a result, I think we gave him more credit because he's not even a good actor. He merely reads from a teleprompter, and the things he say are pretty much totally defy logic. They don't make any sense, and he cannot.
All right, well, what's the solution? And Clarence, what's the solution? What should we do right now? What should we do in November 2012?
The solution we should do is get a real solid, good Republican candidate in office who will not be a Ponzi person to be manipulated by the various forces that are moving towards a global systematic world order. And if we
all right, Clarence, thank you very much for the call. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I just am not real big on conspiracy theories. You know, I think that humanity, quite frankly, is too disorganized to come up with anything this grandiose. The fact of the matter is we got took. I didn't vote for Obama. I assume most of the people listening to me right now didn't either. But a lot of people got sucked in by his charm, by his wit, by the fact that he wasn't George Bush. Look, George Bush's presidency was not all bad, but a lot of big mistakes were made. And George Bush, by making the mistakes he made, and Karl Rove, by making the mistakes he made, and all of those people in that administration, with one or two very great exceptions, such as Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, with those two exceptions, the Bush administration made it possible for Barack Obama to get elected. The Bush administration, quite frankly, left the Republican Party as a smoking hole in the ground. Now what we're seeing a Darwinian evolution. The Republican Party is coming back together. You've got a lot of different candidates. They're going to be on, and you're going to see, well, some of them there, not all of them. Rick Perry is going to be on stage, maybe on Saturday. John Bolton may announce his candidacy in about 3 weeks. But you're going to see eight people up there. You're going to see, well, who are we going to have? Mitt Romney, not a bad guy, not convincing as a conservative. Michelle Bachmann, very accomplished conservative, but she really hasn't done a lot in Congress. Tim Pawlenty, he's really soft. Newt Gingrich, the less said about him, the better. Ron Paul, Herman Cain, Rick Santorum. I'm really not very impressed by any of these people, ladies and gentlemen. We need to smoke somebody else out of the woodwork. All right, we're going to have to take a break. This is Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We'll be right back. Savage. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for the good Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. We're talking about the debate that's going to happen, well, tonight sometime. We're going to see eight, well, I guess some of the candidates that might actually have a shot at getting the nomination, but not really. I'm very unexcited about all these people. I hope you're more excited than I am because we need to find a good candidate. Let's go right back to your calls. Let's go to Abner in Houston, listening in on KPRC. Hey, thanks for calling in. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. Now, about Barack Obama, what is the true Barack Obama? What is his real accent? I mean, he goes to Egypt, and he starts sounding like Muslim. He starts saying from the Holy Quran. And then when he talks in front of Hispanics last October, he said Latinos. He tries to sound Hispanic. When he talks in front of the State of the Union, he tries to talk with proficiency and terminology and phraseology that appeals to all people. When he talks to a Democratic base, he has a different accent. You know, it's funny. If he ever became an actor, maybe that's Hollywood loves him, is it? Because he could do different accents. But I tell you, of all the people he could play on screen, he would do a perfect Muslim. Hey, he could play Osama bin Laden.
Nah, come on. Look, I don't like President Obama. I don't like it one bit. I don't like him personally. I don't like his politics. But, you know, he's a liberal. What else do you need to say? They are chameleons. They try to fit in with every audience they have. You know, liberals always do this. Politicians, to a large degree, of every party do it. But liberals, they are always all things to all people. But they are really nothing to us. They are really nothing because they don't match our abilities. They don't match our principles. They just are different kinds of people. You know, Abner, I hear you. I'm frustrated with this guy too. But at this point, all I want to do is welcome him to a very good long retirement. Let's just get him out of there and let's set about fixing this country. We've got a lot of repairing to do. Hey, thanks for the call. Good call. Let's go to Lawrence in Sacramento, California, my sometime residence. Lawrence, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Insofar as the military budget being cut, I think that really nothing could be a better move on the part of both parties because, the military has way too much money. All they do is go around the world getting us into big problems.
Wait a minute. You think the military gets us into problems? Military that decided to go into Libya?
Disposal. Well, Bush took us into a war against a country that never attacked us. Do you agree with that?
Whoa. That was Bush. And I'm not going to defend President Bush, but I think we had good reason, and he believed what he was told by the intelligence people, so he went there in good faith. But you just said the military dragged us into that. What conflict did the military ever get us into?
No, they've name got one. Much money to spend because
well, how much money they? Look, wait a minute, wait. You're assuming that because the military budget is big, and yes, it is very big. You're assuming that it's just there. I mean, how much military do we need? Do we not need any military? We just disband it, cut the budget
to
zero.
We have
what are
to
you
defend
saying?
Ourselves.
All right, but then wait a minute. And then what do you cut and what do you not cut? That's the point.
Well, here's the thing.
Right now, we have Barack Obama. Barack Obama has cut $400 billion over 10 years already. He proposed $400 billion more in spending cuts. And now we have this super committee may up the $400 to $600 billion? Do you even have an idea what should be cut and what shouldn't? You tell me. What do you want to cut? You want to cut carriers? You want to cut air wings? You want to cut the size of the Army or the Navy? What do you want to cut, Lawrence?
I'd like to cut the size of the Army, the size of the Navy.
Really? To how low? Stop, to how low? Our Navy right now.
Missiles, all that stuff.
Our Navy right now. Lawrence, you know, you're just out there wandering. You're wandering in an intellectual liberal wilderness. Right now, our Navy is smaller than it has been at any time since about 1917. You want to cut something, Lawrence? The Navy now has more admirals than it has ships. Let's cut surplus personnel. Let's get more ships and more capable ships. The Air Force is short about 1,000 fighters from what it estimates it needs. Maybe we need to fire some people. Maybe we need to fire some civilian bureaucrats. Look, Lawrence, I'm not going to pick on you. Let's just say this. We need to find out what can be cut, what needs to be cut. We need to determine what we need before we can figure out what to cut. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Sitting in with you today for Michael Savage was a great, great pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Savage. Thank you, everybody. Jed Babin, RealClearPolitics.com, American Spectator. Good night. Savage.